Welcome to KABU and the Old Mole Variety Hour, Catherine Chetty.
Hi, Jan. It's good to be here.
Well, nuclear promoters have for decades proclaimed that the world is entering an exciting new age that they describe as a, quote, nuclear renaissance. Trump's Department of Energy website's December 2025 message proclaims, quote, the American nuclear renaissance is key to President Trump's agenda to unleash American energy, reopening critical nuclear infrastructure and rebuilding a strong nuclear industrial base will help create a record energy production and lower electricity costs, unquote. Well, Catherine, you and I worked on a documentary film, Atomic Bamboozle, that looks at the history of propaganda behind the decades-long promise of a nuclear renaissance. So let's start with what is new with nuclear under the Trump regime and their corporate supporters beyond their bombastic claims.
Well, what's new, at least at this time, is the massive amount of federal dollars that it's like it's on steroids. And it, even though prior to this current year, there was money coming in for all forms of energy to address the climate crisis that we're in, primarily in the Biden administration, the Infrastructure Act that committed a tremendous amount of resources, primarily financial, to building out our energy grid and our energy resources so that we could lower greenhouse gas emissions and address the climate problem. Now, suddenly, we've shifted to an atmosphere of a race to have energy dominance in the world and to use taxpayer dollars to fund primarily oil, gas, and nuclear, as opposed to renewable sources of energy across the country. So that I see that as the biggest shift within the last year or two that we're facing.
Yeah, this energy dominance is notable also in the shift away from the promotion that of models that is still part of the picture of these small modular reactors that we feature in the film Atomic Bamboozle, where they're promoted through more feminine imagery, the cozy little reactor next door versus these big phallic towers. Well, the Trump regime is really into big phallic imagery.
Yes.
Even as hollow as most of that is.
An additional element that we're seeing is the press for the energy demands are now being forecast. Initially, it was because of electrification and transitioning away from oil and gas. But within the last year to year and a half, suddenly we have this explosion of data centers and artificial intelligence, where we are being told that we need to fund and bring online much more energy generation resources to be able to do this supercomputing and to do the large language models that are involved with the artificial intelligence push. And so that is suddenly at the forefront and really kind of outbalancing our need to address the climate issues and also make sure that people have disaster preparation and we can keep the lights on, that kind of thing.
Yeah, this data center boom, as OpenAI, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and other corporations invest hundreds of billions of dollars to build the giant computing sites that are advanced as part of the AI future we're asked to embrace. It involves a lot of overcoming local resistance to them, as well as being fortified on the financial front and political front by the federal government and in many cases through the states. What about this case in Texas? That's something that you've talked about with Rick Perry, who's also featured in Atomic Bamboozle with the claim of we're going to make nuclear power cool again. How is Rick Perry trying to make nuclear cool again through data centers in Texas?
Well, he and a billionaire in Texas have joined together to take 5,800 acres outside of a nuclear weapons plant in Texas. And it's a massive data center project that will be privately owned. and giving privately owned nuclear powered energy grid for AI. That's their aim. And they're calling it the Donald J. Trump Advanced Energy and Intelligence Campus.
Oh, of
And
course. Nothing has ever been smarter, bigger, better than this.
right. And I would say that's another element of the new over the last couple of years, which is suddenly what we have these billionaires that are committing massive amounts of money for energy generation and in the effort to build data centers and come up with this artificial intelligence. And so the nuclear industry has been in decline and languishing pretty much over the last several decades. And the influx of, first of all, federal money, government money, and then now it's being reinforced with private money. And they've essentially created this model that is public-private partnerships. And a lot of that means that these billionaires are attempting to jumpstart the industry and get their energy needs met and their water. They're going to need a lot of water as well. So it's this kind of counterbalance to what do we need for people across the country to have enough water and to have enough electricity. Suddenly we have billionaires contributing tremendous amounts of money. And it's not just industry, it's essentially convincing our politicians on both sides of the aisle, both Democrats and Republicans, that we need the artificial intelligence, we need the data centers to run our cell phones and to do all those magical things. And therefore, the billionaires are willing to put their money in, but they're also drawing on governments, both at the state level and the federal level, to contribute and to create policies that give them almost unfettered rights to. They're resisting the guardrails that some legislators think are necessary around data centers and around water use and electricity generation. And so they really have a lot of influence with the people who are decision makers, who are deciding whether or not these data centers are going to have tax breaks, whether or not these nuclear startups are going to have access to kind of a streamlined way that sets aside some of the things that we've come to rely on when we think our energy is safe and it's not going to produce health effects that are going to affect our lives.
Yeah, this seems like a more difficult bamboozle in the sense of the bamboozle is a form of trickery where you're seduced into endorsing something that defies logic when you begin to look at it more carefully. So it's a seduction kind of form of trickery. And some years back, the bamboozle was this was a way to deal with our very real fears of climate change and climate catastrophe, that this offered clean energy. And that was the key selling point. And scary images of the climate crisis were routinely set against these kind of contained, clean, futuristic images. Often the models were set against like Swiss Alps scenery and beautiful scenery to emphasize their beauty and harmony with nature. Now, the bamboozle is a much more difficult sell because these data centers are horrifying. AI dominating our future is like a sci-fi disaster film that we're now expected to endorse and inhabit rather than just understand as a cautionary tale. I mean,
Well,
how
I
is this
think,
bamboozle operating in that it's the seductions of it are far less apparent?
well, I think there's a blend of them, of the seductions. The thread of seduction runs through it. That one of the seductions is this is just around the corner. It's the magical thinking. It's we've got the answer and don't worry about it. We're just going to make these things happen. And the delays and the costs are never fully addressed. There's a lot of transparency issues. What you'll see when these startup companies are attempting to get financing and attempting to get politicians to support them with policy is you see these lovely little renditions, like you're describing, of the finished product, but none of these small modular reactors are actually They're not through a design certification, except for one, and they haven't been able to demonstrate that they can operate safely. So you've got these beautiful pictures. For instance, there's a small modular nuclear reactor proposal at Hanford in the state of Washington, and it's sponsored by, and the initial funding, even though it was initially through the Public Utilities and Energy Northwest, which is the collection of public utilities in the Pacific Northwest and located in Washington that runs the nuclear power plant there. They have this proposal where it's still being called a feasibility study. They want to put four small modular nuclear reactors at the Hanford site, which is essentially a sacrifice zone from the World War II plutonium atomic bomb days. And they want to turn this into, if you look on their website and you look at Amazon's renderings about this, because Amazon is the major funder right now, you see these beautiful buildings and it's lovely. They're trying to sell it like this is a smaller land footprint. So, unlike all those wind turbines and unlike all those solar panels, you can get a small footprint energy generation facility. And so that's part of the seduction, not paying attention to if that there are risks where if you have a nuclear accident and if those small modular nuclear reactors that haven't even shown they can operate safely, if they go bad, that's going to contaminate whatever area is around that property. So that's part of the seduction, is to stay away from the risks and to paint this picture of these small things that are going to have big outcomes for addressing our climate risk and also keeping our energy going.
Yeah, the Hanford site is an ongoing tragedy, and a tragedy that came out of World War II and the production of plutonium for the nuclear atomic bomb, and also the push for the Atoms for Peace campaign that followed that era through
Yes.
Eisenhower and Washington and Kennedy. And I think it's part of the rewriting of history that we're seeing a lot with the Trump administration, too, and the far right, and reimagining a past that is a fantasy that relies heavily on repression of an actual history. The nuclear
Right.
renaissance it's invoked as a kind of perpetual mantra and a form of magical thinking, as you said earlier. The imagined golden era to which we are invited to return is, in fact, the 1950s and 60s. And so, in a way, where the Renaissance operates as both a signifier of a past, but also as a repression of the actual past, barring us from actually thinking about what that return would really means. Can you say anything about that hazy nostalgia without content in the
Right.
nuclear Renaissance?
Yeah, I think one of the things that comes to mind is that out at Hanford, it's a tragic history, and the people who lived there and worked there have their memory of it in their writing and in their speaking is of a time when they all had jobs and it brought economic viability to the area, and yet it displaced the tribes that were using that land. It was part of their usual and accustomed ways of gathering food and fishing, and those tribes continue to this day to have great concern about adding any more of the nuclear contamination from siting nuclear power plants that produce waste there. And so there's this back and forth between it was an economically vital time, people got jobs,
And you see
they.
some of that celebrated in Hanford, in museums
Yes.
there, and local people,
Yes.
you're saying. In a way, there were for many white people of
Right,
and a
exactly.
kind of emerging middle class of the 1950s, some level of prosperity that has been dismantled in the decade of industrial
Yeah.
capitalism that followed.
And in order to sell this new proposed advanced, it's called the Cascade Advanced Energy Facility. It doesn't even use the word nuclear. In order to sell that to people, it's being framed as this is not the old contaminated Hanford the waste that's being generated isn't the plutonium waste, even though the waste that's being generated currently there by the Columbia Generating Station, which is an operating nuclear power plant, and the waste that will be generated by adding 4 to 12 more reactors there will continue to sit at that site. And there's no federal depository that's safe for the waste that's being generated. So people who have concerns about it are asking that we not add any more waste until there's a federal solution for permanently disposing of that waste. There are 94 nuclear power plants across the country that have casks sitting there with nuclear waste that can't go anywhere, as the phrase is, the nuclear garbage man hasn't come to pick that up yet.
Yeah, including here in the Trojan site.
But at
Go ahead.
Columbia Generating Station also, every nuclear power plant that gets built has to have a way to store that, the spent fuel rods there. So yes, at Trojan, that operated for a certain number of years, there's a pad there with casks holding spent nuclear fuel that has nowhere else to go. And at the Columbia Generating Station as well, at Hanford right now on that reservation. And then if you put 12 more reactors there, they're also going to be generating and storing that spent fuel.
Yeah, part of the dilemma for resisting this industry and its seductions is how effectively the industry has been able to use the categories of clean and dirty.
Yes.
And the boundary between clean and dirty has a long history as a kind of moral boundary between a dominant group under colonialism, and now we're seeing it under the white supremacy that dominates the Trump regime, where marginalized people and countries, immigrants are cast as dirty or garbage versus white Christians that are in the fold of the clean. And the industry has long used that distinction in claiming this is clean energy set against the
Right.
visible dirt of coal and oil. And of course, we don't see radioactive waste, and it is
No.
literally hidden underground. So its toxicity is less palpable to people.
So it's at both ends of the fuel cycle. So if we're collecting that waste from the spent fuel, irradiated fuel, there are now 1,000 abandoned uranium mines in this country. We're going to have to go after more uranium if we're going to do these advanced reactors. And so there's
Because
a
Russia has been
dilemma.
the primary source of fuel that is
Right.
vital to
And
industry.
Canada also, but Russia primarily. But these sites have not been adequately cleaned up. What we're looking at is an administration that's willing to pour money into making more of it, but is clawing back or avoiding cleaning up those mines, including at Hanford. They've had their workforce cut, they've had their funds cut. Our representatives in Washington are fighting that to get the cleanup is supposed to last the rest of the century at that site, and it needs to be adequately funded. But suddenly, when budgets come up and money gets allocated, the money to clean up Superfund sites and to clean up the uranium mines across the country, that's on the chopping block. While people's lives who live in the areas where uranium is mined, primarily indigenous people, are facing, now there's talk of reopening these mines and/or doing new ones. And in order to satisfy the current administration's emphasis on energy independence. We want to dominate out there in the world, but we don't want to depend on any other country. So let's come back to the United States and figure out all the places that we can go and mine this uranium, which is again undercutting that seductive idea that this is a clean way of producing energy. It's diabolical.
I think part of the promise of the revival of the anti-nuclear movement and alliances between anti-nuclear activists and other environmental activists, which has been difficult in recent decades, is the way in which we're seeing alliances among all these corporate interests and the right-wing regime now running this country. that people are seeing more the connections among the interests of these various corporations producing energy, these costly, heavily destructive extractive industries that are so much at the heart of capitalism. And now, of course, the Trump administration kidnapping the president of Venezuela and claiming we're going to run that country and we're going to take the oil from those people. I mean, all of this has more of the sense of a very brute fist without the velvet gloves of how
Yes.
the regime operated in the past and the rationale behind nuclear in the first place around dealing with the energy crisis of the early 70s and all of the kind of happy talk that has been part of this, the kind of cheerful, seductive message. Now, I think the brute force, the brutality and the aggressive destructiveness and alliances of corporate interests around nuclear oil and coal, the financial sector, government deregulation around any kind of protective agencies or protective laws. I think that is all more on display now, which I think may give us hope for the movements that are organizing in resistance to all of this.
I think so too. I think one of the problems of the nuclear seduction has been, I mean, we saw it in the Bamboozle film where you had Rick Perry standing there with all these young people around him saying, we're going to make nuclear cool again. And those young people are being drawn in, not understanding or knowing about or having awareness of the history. And that's one of the current new things too that's really very troubling is the way history is being erased. I mean, we're seeing it in the way the January 6th history is being redone. And if you weren't paying attention back in 2021, you would kind of believe that it was a peaceful march to the Capitol and that it's the police who instigated the violence. And so people are suddenly faced with a lot of the history that we have of the harms that have been done in this country are being erased off of websites, erased out of history books. School curriculums are being altered so that people don't learn about the ways that our colonialism has harmed people across our country. So that's a downside too. I think the upside being that those of us who know and remember are connecting with each other and attempting to convey the truth to our young people and to ensure that they somehow there's someone is capturing that history so that we can preserve it till a time when we can bring it back out in the open.
In closing, I want to let listeners know that Atomic Bamboozle is now available to watch for free on YouTube, and people can also go to the Atomic Bamboozle website for more information. But would you also like to say a bit about what you're doing in closing, either through your work on this, at the Sierra Club Nuclear Free Committee or through your work here with the Oregon
Conservancy Foundation? Sure. Yeah, I'm a board member on the Oregon Conservancy Foundation, which is a longtime nonprofit that has been advocating for keeping fossil fuels in the ground, something that you've been involved with for a long time, Jan, yourself, with the series that you did on fossil fuels and keeping fossil fuels in the ground and advocating renewables, and in particular, fighting these attempts to bring nuclear back into the current picture. I happen to live in both Oregon and Washington. And in Oregon, I was part of the people that passed the moratorium in Oregon. So Oregon is one of a few states that still has a moratorium on siting nuclear power plants. And we're really fighting to keep that moratorium in place. And I also live in Washington, and I'm part of the Washington Sierra Club, and also a small regional group that covers both Oregon and Washington called the Stop Nuclear Work Group. So there are a lot of avenues for people to connect with groups in the area. Columbia River Keeper also, which is kind of straddles, they're located in Portland, but they work on the health and the safety of the Columbia River area. And so we're facing two legislative sessions, short sessions, one in Oregon, one in Washington. Washington that have bills that are trying to overturn the moratorium in Oregon and also trying to advance nuclear in Washington. And so find a way to connect with a group or with people that have information to let your legislator know, whether they're Democrat or Republican. All of them seem to have been vulnerable to the influence of the nuclear lobby, or most of them have. And so we need to let our legislators know that we think that nuclear takes too long, is too costly, and has safety and proliferation and public health risks that we find not acceptable, and that we want them to say no to any more nuclear power, nuclear energy development in the Pacific Northwest.
Now, this is a future we do not want to inhabit, and another
Yes.
world is indeed possible and necessary. Thank you so much,
Well said,
Catherine,
Jan. Thank you.
for being with us today. And we'll include a few links on the KABU site of where people can continue to tune in to this work. Thanks so much for being with us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Jan, and thanks for all your efforts on this, too.
Yeah, I'm gonna walk around. I wanna make a joyful sound.